question I often ask myself is, where is my mind? That is the name of this podcast. This is the intermission part two, I'm going to call it. I previously had done one where I was going totally crazy, had missed my psych med several days, lacking sleep, and I was going through a severe life crisis, and I did not like it. So I decided to record myself, and stupid me decided to post it. And you know what? I don't regret it. So this is the follow-up when I'm sane again, like I normally am. Please feel free, if you dare, I hope you do, to listen to me talking about the follow-up. What happened next after the severe life incident that happened to me? It involved more than just me. So why did it happen? Well, my borderline, there are phases to the relationship that end up in self-sabotage, toxicity, and breakup. I am going to describe those to you. And during this, I'm thinking of how I act, and I think, where the hell was my mind? Hello, this is Chevy here to ask you, where is your mind? Because I'm often wondering that myself. I am right now. Where is my mind? Well, that's what we're going to discuss. So this right here is something in particular. Right now, I am doing a follow-up intermission part two, I guess I'll call it. On the 15th of this month, June, I posted an intermission video about 40 minutes long called Chevy Goes Crazy Venting. Honestly, I cannot bring myself to listen to it. I don't remember much of it. I remember the basic synopsis, but I know what it was about. I know what I was addressing, and I'd like to do a follow-up. And this is really hard for me. This is going to probably be my hardest one to talk about yet. I've been thinking about doing this for several days now. And I hadn't quite gotten into it yet. Gotten the motivation, I'm okay now. Very unusual time. It is 11:21 in the morning on a Wednesday, on my day off. And I am ready. Let me turn my mic volume down here a bit. Let's see, that's a bit better. Huh? A little too low now. Ayo. I think this works. So, I'm ready to discuss this. So, I am currently single. Let me say that again without my speech impediment. Try this. You can see I'm nervous. I am currently single again. And honestly, being single is one of the scariest things in my life. It sounds sad, but I do have I don't know if it's a fear of being alone, but I don't cope with it well. Even if it's just a friendship, I enjoy having somebody over. Though the alone time is nice because I can do things like this without being self-conscious. I'll post whatever, but recording it around other people is almost impossible for me. I have to be in the right mood, the right time, and the least amount of audience there is. So I really messed up a lot. I think a lot because of my borderline personality disorder. It manifests itself in relationships in certain ways. Last night, my ex-boyfriend really let me have it about some of the bullshit I put him through. I'd like to think that a lot of it was a little bit dramatized, and I do believe it was. Some of it. I'm trying to be like respectful to myself and respectful to him at the same time. So I don't realize what I'm doing as I do it sometimes. I don't realize what I'm doing. It's called self-sabotage. I found a great website here that gives a great description of exactly what goes on in that person's head. Now, this is not my own words, but I can tell you my own words, too. There's phases. It goes through a cycle. It's a cycle of self-sabotage because we are protecting ourselves from a perceived threat. It could be real or imaginary, but either way, there is a perceived threat of abandonment. If you listened to my episode about borderline personality disorder, which is a DSM-5 personality disorder, it is one of the more intense ones, and I do take medication, but I don't always take it sometimes, unfortunately. We have a big fear of abandonment. I personally On top of that, I have a big fear of rejection, especially in the eyes of my spouse or significant other. I put them on a pedestal. BPD people, people with borderline personality disorder, have what is often called a favorite person. That can be your parent, your teacher, your boss, your sibling, or in most cases, if you have one, it's your significant other, it's your lover, your romantic partner. When I met, I'm going to use different names here because it makes me feel more comfortable, okay? When I met Jonathan, he gave me this impression right off the bat of he was perfect. He had his shit together. He knew left from right, for example, you know. He had his shit, okay? Like, he had a great car, he had a good job, and he seemed to, he seemed to be able to take care of himself, and he had an interest, a very big interest in taking care of me. And I've never been taken care of before. I was living a lifestyle, a gay lifestyle throughout high school and throughout college and after. And I'd been out of a relationship with a very, I guess you might call him, narcissistic man at the age of 19. He was narcissistic. He admitted to having used me to feel young again. I was 19. He was 32 or something like that. And I ended up getting with a woman, became my wife, bore my children. There was a big breakup early on there. I made some bad decisions. Here I am. And I wasn't apart from her for more than a couple of months, two months when I got with my ex-girlfriend. It just worked out, two girls in a row for 11 years. But I find myself back to who I am now. I am bisexual, but I consider myself gay, pretty much, because I have no interest in dating women. So it's just easier to explain that way. So, either way, I always had to take care of my women, my children. I was the caretaker, and it was honestly too much for me at the end. I was experiencing incredible burnout, and I just had to keep raging on. It was fucking hard. But then, being single, one fling with a girl lasted a month. And a cigarette. And then, this person, this man that came into my life, who showed interest in me, I played hard to get, and he kept showing interest, and we met up, and he just seemed fucking perfect, and in many ways, he is perfect, he still is, in many ways, I value him, and think he's fucking incredible, but anyway, so, circumstances happened, his income dried up, and there was a car accident, so there was some, he lost a lot of power, and felt devalued for a while, which I can totally see would put somebody's mood on edge. So here's how it goes. So I feel like I was love bombed, but I don't care. It felt great. I had never been love bombed before. Holy shit, not like that. That one included more than just the affection and love, but the caretaker thing too. Many men are afraid to admit or are unaware of the fact that they actually are looking for a mommy figure. Women are well aware when they want a daddy figure. They know. They say, I want a daddy. Even gay men, I want a daddy. Well, a lot of men want a mommy figure. And that's because they were raised by their mother, probably. And that their mother probably gave them some sense that they were abandoned or should fear that at some point in their childhood. And even as far repressed as those memories can get, that is what they seek out subconsciously for the rest of their lives. I did not realize this about myself until last summer, being single, when my roommate, my heterosexual best friend, pointed out, seems like you're looking for a mommy figure. And I said, oh, shut the fuck. Wait a minute. Thinks about it. You know, you might be right, and that scares me. And I was describing what I wanted in a woman. He's like, that's not your typical woman, Brian. Yeah, I know. Reverse roles. So trust me, I'm better with men, and I'm more attracted to them anyway. So that's besides the point. So I'm talking about myself too much. This whole thing is about myself. This whole episode is about me and what I've gone through. If you care to follow it up. Now, that Chevy Goes Crazy episode, I think, has three plays. Oh, my God, I'm so excited. If you actually are listening to this, you probably know me, and that makes it a lot easier, right? You're probably my only source of getting any listens, but you know what? I'm just posting this shit out here because one day I or somebody, maybe a future partner or maybe my children, will listen to this one day. They'll find it online. And they'll say, so that was Dad in 2022, huh? Yeah, we're so young then. Who knows, okay? This will serve a purpose at some point, I feel. So, BPD and codependent relationships. My partner, my ex-partner, which breaks my heart to say that. I want to tear up every time I say it. I don't handle this shit well. My emotions are stronger than other people's. That's why I drink. I numb it down. So my partner did have an issue with codependency, but less so than I have. I am BPD, and BPD and codependency tend to go together hand in hand. It is just a common theme. Just like it's called comorbidity, where one significant diagnosis goes hand in hand with another one or another trait. Codependency is not a disorder. It is a personality trait, or a relationship style. And trust me, it sucks. I am currently learning self-love. I am about to undergo, hopefully, my dialectical behavioral therapy, like I've been mentioning, starting Zoom this week, and I get a ride next week. So wish me luck. So anyway, I do have suffered from BPD for a long time. I first heard of it when I was 27, and I stopped seeing that therapist about a year later. I am now seeing the same therapist again after a four-year break, and I'm very excited about that. He understands me, and he knows me, and he sees my improvement, I hope. He probably sees my lack of improvement here and there, too, because I can't say I'm perfect on everything, you know. I'm far from it, obviously, otherwise I wouldn't be making this episode. So, not only are BPDs often codependent, but we also often also attract other codependents. And it also can be somebody with NPD, narcissistic personality disorder, or more often than not, narcissistic traits. Now, this is up for debate in my relationship here that I had. I saw some traits in him, but also there are traits of that in myself. Narcissistic traits can often be confused as such with somebody with BPD. They can be borderline diagnosed with traits of narcissism. I get cocky sometimes. Yeah, only rarely, very rarely do I get cocky. And I'll admit, it's straight out of insecurity, as it often is with the narcissists themselves. If I get cocky about something and I act like I'm king shit, trust me, that is me deflecting my own severe insecurity. I'll admit that to anybody right now. So get that out of the way. If I'm acting that way, it ain't because I think I'm better. I want to be better. And now my phone's ringing. Intermission of the intermission. Yuck. I just got a call that was actually a good call, but nonetheless anxiety-inducing. And I have an anxiety issue. So, back to the original point. I'm already 11 minutes in and I haven't even gotten to it yet. These are the stages of a BPD relationship with somebody, particularly that is codependent. And may I say that my ex-partner was very mildly codependent. It was hard to even notice, but I saw it, and I mentioned it. So, Jesus Christ. Part of it is the honeymooner. Okay, I'm using a website that I found is very accurate. It is called Reignite the Fire. ReigniteTheFire.net. And they seem to know what the hell they're talking about here, actually. I'm pretty impressed. So, one thing is that they don't defend the borderline, but they point out the stereotypes and sometimes inaccuracies of people with BPD. So the BPD person seems like the sweetest, most charming guy that, in this case, he ever dreamt of dating, ever met, ever even thought of seeing. And you know what? That's what he was to me, too. He was this amazing figure, had his shit together, and I'm like, wow. And he gave me love, cuddling, affection. I gave it all right back to him. I gave him everything I had. And that's what I would always do in any case if I think they're right for me. I fell under the spell and felt like I found the one. I quoted this from Read It in the Fall. So, they also want to point out here that it's not like somebody with BPD is a master manipulator who just wakes up every morning and thinks, oh, well, I can't wait to see who else I can manipulate today and ruin their lives. I can't wait to see what relationship that I always dreamed of I can fuck up today. This is all done subconsciously, okay? I never actually looked up these things, these symptoms, these phases until recently. So, remember, relationships go 50-50. It's not all in one person, not all on the other. So we love bomb each other. We just give each other so much love and affection. We are the utmost person in their entire lives. He is the only person I care about, and I'm the only person that he cares about for a while. And honestly, it feels fucking amazing. I had never been cared for like that before. I had never been held with strong arms like that. Just caring, soft, and strong at the same time. I could fantasize about this all day, trust me. I fantasize about it all the time. So, we're in the honeymoon phase. The honeymoon phase is intense. I love very passionately, and codependence receive it passionately, and the whole thing is fiery, and we are on fire. Rockets are flying every which way, and there's lots of sex. It is fucking hot, and more ways than one. So let's keep moving on. We are in the seducer stage. Okay, now at that time, I used to use this term. I called him my knight in shining armor. He is my knight in shining armor. I'm quoting ReuniteTheFire.net here by saying, quote unquote, doing good deeds and being this quote unquote white knight, end quote, will never score you any points. In fact, it makes the relationship worse as time goes on, end quote. And that blew my mind. I'm like, really? So that knight in shining armor, my hero, my savior, shit, that I fully gave him those titles, and I meant them too, they could be toxic. Because of who I am. So I'm reading here, quote unquote, the problem with having that codependent mindset is your need for approval and love. That would be him. You feel as if your life would be much worse without your BBD partner. It seems like they're almost talking in reverse, because me with BBD, I thought my life was impossible without him once I met him. I met him, and now I couldn't imagine it without him. Here I am, still living. But every day is another cry, another tear. Every day is another anxiety attack. And that's my codependency and my feeling of being rejected and abandoned. So both of us had weak boundaries. Weak boundaries are a big thing. He let me get away with so much. And the thing is that I will do things sometimes unless I'm told not to. I've been told no so much in my life that if I just do things, I'll take the no. I'm sorry, I didn't know that wasn't allowed. But if I'm never told no, then how will I know? How will I know that it's a no? Boundaries need to be stated to me. I don't work on riddles and cues. I am a very direct and blunt and honest person, if you couldn't tell by now listening to this fucking podcast. Whereas my mind is me giving it to you straight up. I don't fuck around. My own personal quote, and I've utilized this a lot, quote unquote, I don't mince my words. I mean what I say, and I say what I mean. End quote. Always. Unless I'm fucking with somebody, which is very rare. But sometimes I like to fuck with people. And I still don't lie. I managed to do that without lying. But I don't like to do that, because that's toxic. So, anyway, weak boundaries between both of us, yeah, that grows more and more toxic. So BPD relationships tend to evolve towards chaos, and that's a quote from the site. Quote unquote, your lack of boundaries and codependent core ultimately are to blame. That applies to both of us. So it's rare, but there are people with borderline that find love. There are people with borderline that find love for the rest of their lives. There is a very specific type of person that is needed to handle a BPD person. They need to be very patient, be willing to give more love than criticism, and that can be hard. Saying, I need more love from you than criticism. That sounds rational, but at the same time, it sounds kind of demanding and needy, doesn't it? I can't say those things. So anyway, we need to set the strong boundaries, and we need to have the right attitude about them. So the codependency will fuck everything up. They say no relationship will ever work in a codependent state. I would love to disagree, and I always have, but I have yet to see that they're being wrong. So anyway, one of us is the seducer, and I guess me being the position I was in the bedroom, that could have been me. He was this fantasy I've always had. I remember saying to him, I've always dreamed of being with somebody like you. You are the one I've always wanted to be with. I've been waiting my whole life for you. I remember saying that line a lot for the first couple months. I've been waiting my whole life for you. And here you are. I was in love with you since the moment I saw you. And that is the honeymoon period getting closer to an end. So once that ends, and for us, we had a long one. It lasted about 2.5 months, almost 3. By the end of the, by the start of the third month, though, we are into what they call the quote-unquote vulnerable clinger phase. Most people, it says, believe that people with BPD have some elaborate plan to hook you in with their massively crafted seductions. Well, I hate to be the bearer of bad news here, but people with BPD don't have these elaborate plans, unless they're sociopaths. And trust me, with my emotions, I am far from a sociopath. I feel my emotions more strongly than anybody without BPD could ever imagine. If you don't have this disorder, if you don't, you will never know what it's like to feel emotions to the extreme levels that I do. When I am sad and I feel heartbroken, I feel like my insides are just tearing apart. When I am angry, which is not that often anymore because I take a medication for it, but when I am angry, I am irate. I am about to throw shit across the room and break this chair, but I don't. But I want to. When I am happy, I am full of bliss and joyful and gleeful. Like, wow, Brian really loves this song. You're fucking right. I fucking love this song, man. That's the song I fucking heard in my life. Wow. Yeah, it gets pretty intense. So you get the point. So the problem is that me and my partner, as with many people in this kind of dynamic, we both have issues with love. And it causes our relationships to fail. Both of us are the result of past failed relationships. So he was an enabler. That's not a bad thing to him. He did nothing wrong by being an enabler. He filled that role of caregiver, of the knight in shining armor, the savior, to come here to save me from loneliness and take care of me like I've always wanted. I've always wanted that mother figure, and he filled it. Yes, he filled the mother figure. Yes, that is possible with gay relationships. So I was enabled, and I got an expectation. I developed an expectation that this is the way it will always be. When the honeymoon phase started to end, I started to feel it first. He took it naturally, like most people would do. Any rational person would think, okay, the honeymoon phase is coming to an end, and now it's time to enter the early stages of relationship phase. I said, early stages of relationship phase does not mean honeymoon ends for me, because I'm passionate. I can live in that imaginary world that will always be madly in love with each other, desperate to fall into each other's arms at the end of the day, every night. No, it doesn't work like that for people with BPD, because we tend to think on an extreme level and we tend to act that way too. And we love, though. We love loving like that. I remember saying to him, I guess this was a bad mistake. I remember telling my partner, Zeke, Ian, Jonathan, Daniel, what the fuck his name is. We're coming up with fake names here. You know what his name is. Come on, if you listen. I remember telling him that, why does the honeymoon phase have to end? Why end it now? Why can't we love each other that deeply forever? I don't understand. And he really didn't have an answer for me. He kind of shrugged his shoulders and said, it just doesn't always last that way, Brian. And I should know this, having been through all... But he's like my fifth relationship in my adult life. I'm 32, and in 14 years, I've had five. That's because I was in long-term. But how successful were they? There you go. So the clinger phase is what happens once you've been seduced and fully invested in your partner. It's extremely predictable and expected when it happens. So we were clinging on each other. I was the clinger, though. This kind of has it a little bit wrong because I was the BPD and also the clinger. He was the codependent that needed me but did not want to show anybody he needed me. He was supposed to be the independent one, the bigger one of the party, and I liked that. I loved it. He was my everything. So it says here, it will come in the form of the borderline complaining about life, first world problems, calling and texting you about how she is sad, how they miss you so much, how they need you to come over, etc. Yes, that is exactly what happened. Now, Matt and I dated, there's his name, upset. Matt and I dated from October 23rd, and we did not move in until late January, so about 3 months into the relationship before he moved in. And I would always text him. I'd cry when he leaves. He'd leave in the morning, I cried. That's pathetic. I think it is. Yeah, I did it. That's how I felt. Your emotions are yours. Never deny them. Own them. I cried. I felt despair. So eventually, he moves in, and the honeymoon phase kept going. I mean, so I was less than 4 months. You know, I was wrong. Leaning longer, 4 months. So I was always this fun, positive, highly energetic partner. You know, now I'm starting to share all my stupid first world problems I'm going through. I start saying, this pisses me off in life, and that pisses me off. This is wrong, and that's wrong. Not with them, just in general, my general problems. Like, and I'm bitching all the time, because honestly, that's kind of who I am, and it sucks. I'm trying to get out of it. I've been trying to get out of it for a long time, because people don't want to hear this shit. But, I mean, if you're intoxicated, and to a certain degree, yeah, you just bitch a lot. I have so many things I want to complain about. But I'm not here on this podcast to bitch, so. Like, just hear friends, problems at work, family, problems, blah, blah, blah. Small, basic problems just to complain about to you. Because you know what? I didn't have anybody to listen to me in a long time. I had my friends that I can talk to online through Facebook Messenger, but that doesn't, typing it is not the same. I'm a very expressive man. I love expressing myself through my voice and my body English and everything I do. I like to be the one to show you exactly how I feel and take it or leave it, motherfucker. So, at this point, we are transitioning out of the seducer phase. So, me though, I'm needy and desperate for love, and so was he. He didn't show the neediness, but he was definitely desperate for love. He ate it right up. He listened to me complain for hours. It's about life. I remember one time we had a 2-hour phone conversation where I told him my entire life story. I might have been longer than 2 hours. I spent the entire time talking. He sat there and listened for at least 2 hours straight. Thank you, Matthew. The things you've done for me, despite our breakup, the things you've done for me are unparalleled by anyone else I've ever known. All I can do is say thank you. I love you and I miss you. I still feel that way. So, yeah, and he would jump in his car on a whim and drive over to cuddle all night because I've had such a rough day. You know, I'm the damsel in distress and he's my hero. So, he needed to be approval. He's codependent. He gladly accepted. You know, the love was there and hopefully there was often sex, yeah. So, that's when you know that it's coming to more of a needy phase. One person is there more than the other one. Like it says here, instead of having sex, you're just cuddling and being there for her. I often did want the sex still, but there was a point right in the middle, right at the end. At the end of this phase, I wanted sex less. I was more about the cuddling because I'm a cuddle whore. One person, hopefully, but I love to fucking cuddle. I get the oxytocin rush. I get the natural high. My heart rate slows down. My blood pressure slows down. And I just feel so calm. And I just feel so at peace. And God forbid, I might even pass out. I might fall the fuck asleep. What was I giving to him, though? He didn't ask for anything. I'd ask him every now and then, hey, what can I do for you, Matt? You do so much for me. And I don't remember his answer. I think he would tell me that he already told me in a cryptic way, and I told him I don't understand. I want to help you, but I don't know what it is. Or he might say he didn't need anything, and I felt terrible. I remember that for a while. I felt really bad about that because I did not want an uneven relationship like that. I was aware already somewhat of what a codependency can do to a relationship, and we both are in our own ways. It sucks. So anyway, we are now at the point where the clinger phase is happening and it's becoming more toxic as my needs are being met and I'm demanding them even more because I'm used to them, and if they're less, then I'm like, what the fuck? Where's my cuddles? Which is really not okay. And I don't know what he needed. So I never stopped being attracted to Matt, I want to say. I never rejected him. Never. There was one point where after several bouts of a certain toxic behavior, I said, if you do this one more time, I don't know. I'll be back. Intermission on intermission. I am back. I do so apologize about the phone noises. Unfortunately, I am getting some important messages today while I'm recording this, so I do need to be aware of them. Hey, it shows that I'm real. I'm sitting here in my dining room kitchen into a space here on my little computer desk, cluttered-ass apartment, all by myself. Pictures of my kids right there, a bunch of stuffed animals hanging around, a bunch of clutter. So, it's just me. So anyway, though, this is the part where I was starting to be rejected. I have a big fear of rejection, which he does too, but I never rejected him. I never turned him down, and never once threatened to actually leave him except for that one time, which was literally less than a month ago now. It is currently the 23rd or something of June. So the BPD, like me, we have very predictable behavior. People know what to expect from me. If you get to know me, you know what to expect. These phases, this is what happens almost every time. You can make a relationship with BPD person work by not being a part of the phases. So I believe that Matt was having an inner battle with himself because he wants to be my hero. He loves rescuing the damsel in distress. But until he trains himself to stop being the rescuer, says that the BPD relationship will fail. As he was the rescuer of my knight in shining armor, he was enabling me to continue that and to an extreme, so that way when that phase ran out, because that was part of the honeymoon phase, the prolonged one, was that hold me, cling to me, make me feel better. I cannot be comfortable with myself, so I need you to do it for me. And then he realized that he can't help me anymore. Nothing he's doing is helping anymore. So now we're on to what I just mentioned. The rejection phase is the final phase, according to the experts of BPD. So apparently, people at BPD just randomly decided to start hating on them. Do I start hating on him? I resented him because I felt like he wasn't holding true to his end of the bargain. And at the same time, I started getting paranoia so bad, and jealousy, that even if he had not left the apartment, if I called him and he didn't answer the phone, finally, I hear back from him in 10 minutes. Finally, only 10 minutes, and I'm freaking out. Oh, he's in the shower. A perfectly reasonable excuse. He told me half an hour earlier, an hour ago, he was going to take a shower soon. It took him a while to get in. But for all I know, he was in the bedroom with another man. But why? Why would he do that? I was given no reason to think that would happen. He had always told me about anybody that was coming over, anybody he would go to see. He was very open and honest with me. I believed him. But there was this voice in the back of my head. I need to slow down. But there is this voice in the back of my head when I was at work that told me, but what if you don't question it and he's doing it, then you'll be played a fool like you were with your ex-wife. So you have to question it to show that if you are right, at least you suspected it. And that is a very toxic thing to do. That is, I believe, the number one thing that probably drove my lover away. So this is what they say on ReigniteTheFire.net. Here's the thing, quote unquote. Out of every single healthy, fully functional adult I've ever known, not a single one of them likes to be in a relationship with someone that doesn't have their own life going on. See, here's what I've heard. There are three lives. There is my life, his life, and our life. And eventually, for the one with borderline, it becomes his life and our life. And I lose my sense of self willingly, and that's what I want. I want to just be us. I want to be a team only, and that is not okay. I guess you would say it is toxic. It is, because I lost my sense of self. I gave it up. I didn't want it. I wanted just him, us, and I'm alone. Like now, I'm recording this. I have some sense of self. I have some sense of loving myself. Trusting myself to do this by myself. Actually, I record better by myself anyway. It's one of the few things I do better by myself. So I didn't know what to do with myself. Like, without him, I was lost. And I'm at work, and I'm thinking he has all this free time. He can do anything he wants. I have no idea. You know, I only call him once an hour. That's a lot, even. People like me, I'm so codependent that I need to call my partner on every single smoke break I have. And I slowed that down after a while. I need to slow down my speech. I slowed down the needing him all the time thing. I tried to, at least. The calling him every smoke break, texting him throughout the day, I didn't even talk to my friends. He's all I wanted to talk to, and I smothered the living hell out of him. That person, he's codependent in some way, but that's because he wants to feel needed. But there comes a point when you're needed so much after the clingy phase should have ended. It's just not right, man. I'm looking at myself from the back of my head. He's told me what he feels about it. He says, it's just Brian, I'm not used to this. This isn't normal. You know, I'm like, well, it is normal for me. Well, you know what, Brian? That's Chevy. Don't say my real name. So you know what, Chevy? It doesn't matter if it's not normal for you, because nothing about you is normal. The previous relationship style seems abnormal to you because they were open relationships, and I don't like that. But your relationship style is far more unusual than an open relationship. I'm like the baby needing his mother. It's pathetic. I hate myself for it. I look at myself and I say, you're just a fucking piece of shit. You're a worm. You're a leech. You just take. It's not true. I tried to give. I tried to do that. It wasn't enough. I argue with myself like this in my head. So then we're at the rejection phase. So when you decide, quote unquote, so when you decide to give up your own life and fully focus on your partner with BPD, which he had done, you actually become the one responsible for pushing away your partner. It's hard to understand, but it's true. Now you're going to argue back and say how everything you're doing is intended to help or please or try to make things better or whatever. It says here, do you know what we call these sort of people that do that? People pleasers. And I had noticed that about him a long time ago, in the first month. I said, you're a people pleaser. These types of people are actually very unhealthy for relationships because a people pleaser has lost sense of him or herself. I wonder if Matthew Effersley had a sense of himself. I've often wondered that. Has he ever known himself? Because he's always existed for other people. So, it says boundaries just no longer exist. Well, we hadn't really set boundaries to begin with. My boundaries are clear. Please don't yell at me, and I need snuggles all the time. And he said he could do that. But I was yelled at several times. Screamed at the top of his lungs. And it hurt, and I started to get resentful because he was doing one thing that I said was my boundary and violated my boundaries. And it also triggered my trauma from my childhood and other times in my life where I was yelled at relentlessly for long periods of time. And I just shut down, and I was so upset after that. I wasn't angry. I was hurt. And now I sound like a whiny little bitch, and he didn't like that either. His mean side came out. As she showed me, he can be a bitch. As he told me, he said he has his bitch phase. He told me it from the get-go, and I said, I hope you don't use it on me. There wasn't quite an answer for that. So, he wanted independence. He wanted to not be less codependent. He wanted to be less codependent because I was smothering the living hell out of him. So, it says, the people of the BPD, that's me, we have some elaborate plan to control you and bring out the hater, but that's a load of crap. So, our relationship's already a two-way street. I needed to respect his boundaries and his independence, whereas he needed to tell me these things. He feels controlled. I don't want to control him, but he has control of himself. And I told him, I never once told him he could not go somewhere, hang out with friends. If I didn't like it, I'd say, well, okay, if you must, you know. And that's not being manipulative. That's just me saying, I'm a little uncomfortable with that because of this person's history with you, but you do what you want to do, and I won't judge you for it or ask questions. So, you know, I'm not trying. Yeah. So, going on this phase in our relationship. Fuck. Okay, we're pretty much done with this thing now for the most part. What I'm reading here on this website, but regarding my relationship, near the end of it, he left abruptly after an incident, a blowout. Usually on my end, I would blow up, and he would leave, and he would ghost me for at least 24 hours. And I had a big issue with that because, as I've told him and many others, my biggest pet peeve, my biggest trigger, more than almost anything else, is being completely and utterly ignored. Just silent treatment, whether it's in person or through the phone, silent treatment is, I can't explain it. I become irate. I want to smash everything, like nothing. Nothing gets me like that. And I was vulnerable with this person. I loved him. I thought I could be. And I told him that this was my number one trigger, and it hurts me so deeply. So that's what was done to me. So that right there is a little bit toxic. That is malicious. That is with intent to harm. But I still love him anyway. I was glad to see him back. He comes back. It's the push-or-pull tactic on both of us. We're both doing the push-or-pull. It's a manipulation tactic. And he pushed me, and then he pulled me back, and I push him, and I pull him back. But eventually I'd say, you know, what you did wasn't cool. What you did was not right to me. And then here we go. So it says here, quote-unquote, last thing I'll read, hopefully, because all of your thoughts and emotions are heavily on your BPD partner. You've literally put your own sense of well-being completely into your partner's hands. 100% your own doing. Sorry. This is a huge responsibility that no one wants to have. This is why they raised you. You can't seem to figure it out, but if somehow someone decided to throw all the responsibilities onto you, you'd probably rage as well. Yeah, and he raged because I threw everything on him. I had my problems. If I need to feel better, it's his job to make me feel better. I need to be held. So, it's not all the BPD person's fault, okay? It's not all my fault. The codependent, the knight in shining armor is at fault too, because he was my enabler. He was the first person to ever show me that I could be this way and it would be reciprocated in the way I always dreamed of. I actually had a real mother that loved me no matter what. But now that mother hates me. And I think, hopefully, there's a chance we might get back together. We were at the talking phase, kind of, sort of. And then last night, there was a big argument through text. And I don't know where we stand now. And I'm fucking scared, man. I need to move on and find somebody new. But I'm not ready to yet. I'm not ready to even really talk to anybody but him. I am still very dedicated. I'm not going to have sex with anybody for any time soon, I don't think. Unless it's spontaneous and I actually didn't like it. But there's a lot of silence going on between us right now. And I lost my rides to my therapy out from him, trying to find them elsewhere. I have lost rides to get my children. Luckily, my ex-wife is making that a lot easier for me because of my situation. Oh, poor me. But apparently, I hurt him pretty hard. Last night I got a tirade of text messages from Matt, and he was dramatizing them, but apparently I did some pretty horrible things to him. I made him feel in some pretty horrible ways. My behavior caused him to feel X, Y, Z, you know, and so forth. And I feel terrible. My amount of guilt right now is overwhelming almost. So I'm ashamed. I live my every day of my life, I walk around with guilt. I wake up in the morning with shame and guilt, and I push it aside. I do whatever I do or take or think, whatever coping mechanism I use to push away that feeling of shame and guilt, but they're always there. They're either masked or they're not. Right now, they've been unmasked for a while. I cry every day like some little fucking pussy. I ruminate all day long what I could have done better. What could I have done better? It's my fault. He is at fault too. We both were. And I'm too open and blunt about my feelings. And Matthew, unfortunately, has his feelings locked under a bunker, a steel bunker. And they're almost impossible to get out. You can't even you might get a grenade in there and kill one soldier, but that bunker is still fucking intact, motherfucker. He's locked up tight. And apparently, every time he tried to tell me his feelings, I cut him off and did not listen to him. Unfortunately, I don't doubt that. As much as I begged him to tell these things to me, I don't doubt that because I have a tendency in conversation to cut people off frequently. And I believe that is because when I was younger and all throughout my life into today, in most social settings, I am completely ignored and talked over in groups. So I will raise my voice louder, continue talking, and override their override. Counterattack, bitch. So I ended up putting that into everyday conversation. I would just talk too much. I had nobody else to talk to. I had no outlet. There was Matt. Always willing to listen. So this is the structure of the phases for the BPD and codependent relationships. And it sucks because a lot of BPD are also codependent. So it's two of us and codependent in two very different ways. This could be a great dynamic. It could be hot and heated and sexy. Or it'll all fall apart. Right now, it depends on if he will find the willingness in his heart to forgive me for how I made him feel inadvertently. I didn't see myself doing this as it happened. I would nag at him and bitch about this and tell him he's doing this wrong and that wrong. Do it my way. My way's better. And I would tell him how to live his life. And I didn't realize I was doing it. I thought I was being helpful. But how would I feel if somebody came into my life and told me I need to change the way I do everything? That's kind of what the therapy is about. But I'm doing it voluntarily. Big difference. And it's because it's my ways of life right now are detrimental. My relationship styles are detrimental to my own mental health. So here we go. I went on for a lot longer than I thought, but I call this the follow-up intermission. BPD. Destructive phases. There you go. destructive relationship phases. Now I'm just talking to myself. So this is the second one I've aired in one day. The last one was made last night, but night before last. But this one was just now. I'm trying to hear it right now. Unedited. I do not listen to my recordings after I make them. I just let it flow. I just play it for what it is. Errors and all. I like things to be raw and natural. Unedited. No makeup. I don't need, as Ben Folds said, some shitty producer with computers to fix all my shitty... Some producer with computers to fix all my shitty tracks. Just let it be the way it is, man. So... These are my raw feelings mixed with a website that reignitethefire.net that really helped me phrase this in ways that I had struggled with otherwise. Thank you, whoever wrote this. Is there an author here? Rick. Rick, thank you for your story there, because you made a lot of fucking sense. There's a lot more to it in my relationship. There always is. These are the basic details. There's some details that are private. I don't want to divulge any secrets and hurt anybody's feelings. Time is 12:13 p.m. on June 22nd. It is Wednesday. Chevy, the borderline, super romantic, crazy fucking raccoon, over and out. Thank you for listening. If you made it this whole podcast, wow. I really mean it. You are amazing.